La primavera llegó y eso significa limpieza a tope. Ya sea que necesites comprar cositas de limpieza o cambiar tu ropa de invierno por ropa fresca, asegúrate de usar iBora para recuperar dinero por cada compra. Ahora mismo, iBora ofrece a nuestros oyentes $5 solo por descargar usando el código La Música cuando te registras. Simplemente ve al App Store o Google Play Store y descarga la aplicación gratuita de iBora para empezar a ganar reembolsos. Usa el código La Música. Eso es IBOTTA en Google Play o App Store y usa el código La Música.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Hey there, Fangirl Nation. You are listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job podcast on Blue Wire. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and I am so excited to be joined today by Sports Emmy award-winning journalist, Sports Emmy-nominated filmmaker, and tech executive, Amber Theo Harris. Amber talks about being a woman in the sports industry and how it's changed, fighting for those who are often not heard, and believing in your value. She also discusses how she moved into the world of tech and why she is constantly creating. This episode is pretty spectacular, so make sure to subscribe, listen, rate, and review. Amber, thank you so much for joining me today for Get My Job. I have been so excited to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to come on.
Absolutely. Let's jump right into it. You do so many incredible things. So if you could start by kind of getting us through your professional journey to this point, and then we'll, of course, take a deeper dive into everything.
Oh my goodness, how long do you have? It's the older you get, the longer that becomes. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
Perfect.
I'm a journalist by trade. That's, you know, what I set out to do. And I've had a long 20 plus year career in sports, everything from, you know, starting at the very local levels to working my way up to hosting Thursday Night Football on NFL Network. I've worked for MLB Network, NBC Sports, CBS Sports. I've done it all in that realm. And I still have shows on Sirius XM. And I also do Westwood One. I do games and also another studio show for them. So a lot going on in the sports world still. But I ventured out and started making films and started different forms of storytelling about 4 years ago. And right now I have a current film on HBO called The Weight of Gold that's gotten a lot of attention with what's happening with Simone Biles lately in the Olympics. So, you know, I'm working on that. I finished that film. I'm working on a few others right now. And what else? And then I am a tech executive, which, you know, was kind of a product of COVID. I fell into that in designing and overseeing the creative process for a gaming app that kind of uses my sports acumen to kind of bring to a different platform. So that's been really exciting, learning a lot in that field as well.
Let's talk about The Weight of Gold. You were nominated for an Emmy. Congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
What was the genesis of the documentary? And in light of this Olympics, as you said, obviously it's gotten a lot of attention because everything that's gone on with Simone Biles. How important is it to continue to tell these stories and make sure people understand that mental health is health? They are one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, the genesis of the story is really sad. And you, as a storyteller, you try to tell stories that sometimes just come to you. You didn't pick them. It's almost as if they picked you. Mm-hmm. And this story picked me because I was working on another story. And immense tragedy led to The Weight of Gold. I was doing a story about a U.S. bobsled captain that had won gold in Vancouver. And he had a degenerative eye disease, coincidentally the same eye disease that I have. And he was going blind and he didn't want to tell anybody with the Federation. And he attempted suicide and he lived through that. And he learned and he did experimental surgery, got his eyes fixed. And so it was, we were covering this wonderful documentary of, you know, the old agony of defeat, you know, adversity, and then the thrill of victory, right? That's what we do in sports. We tell those stories. But 12 days after we interviewed, his name is Stephen Holcomb. 12 days after we interviewed Stephen here in LA for that film, my colleague Brett Rapkin and I got a call that he was found dead in his hotel room, that he had died by suicide. And that hit hard. We were with him just a few days earlier. He spoke about his battle with depression. He spoke about the fact that he still battled with his demons, that even though he's gotten help, it'll never go away. And, you know, we talked to him about it, but I guess we didn't see the red flags. And that's something that I'll carry with me the rest of my life. And so we were devastated. And we had this last interview of him talking about a really important topic. And then at the same time, Michael Phelps was emerging. And I knew Michael from being a Baltimore athlete because I came up in the Baltimore sports scene. Mm-hmm. And Michael was being very vocal about his struggles with mental health. And Brett and I just kind of had this moment of, you know, we've got a completely different movie here, completely different. And this film needs to be about mental health in our elite athletes. So we started just on a hunch going down that path. We joined forces with Michael Phelps, and we started interviewing Shaun White and Sasha Cohen and Bodie Miller and Apollo Ohno and Lolo Jones and all these gold medalists. And they had the same story. And it was that of their battles with depression and what it is like to be the best at the world in something. And then what it's like after that's over, whether you won gold or not. We had no idea that there was a crisis. We had no idea that this was a pandemic of its own, a worldwide pandemic of mental health crises within our elite athletes. But we learned that, and we told that story. And we had no idea when it aired last year on HBO that the greatest American gymnast of all time, Simone Biles, was going to withdraw because of mental health issues from the Olympics. We could have never predicted that. And so the film has gotten attention because of that. And, you know, you wish you could celebrate the success of the film, but we've never felt that way. Mm-hmm. We've always felt like we did something important, and hopefully it educated people. But those are the stories you wish you didn't have to tell.
Mm-hmm. But yet the ones that are so important to tell.
I believe so. And I believe that there are kids, there are adults, there are a lot of people that saw that film and said, oh my goodness, if these colossal mammoth gods, these athletes that we see as invincible, are saying they're suffering, then I don't feel alone and I don't feel weird. And maybe I can go get some help too. And I think that was the number one thing I hope the people took away from the film. You know, mental health is a crusade I've battled myself, and I understand it is a lifelong, you know, battle, whether you're getting help or not. Even those that are getting help, you always have to stay on top of it. And one of the beautiful things that came with this film was I was working at NFL Network when I was shooting it, and how many NFL players that I'm friends with, former NFL players, they would ask me, oh, what are you doing with Michael today? And who'd you shoot? And they, for a couple of them, the Reggie Waynes and the Reggie Bushes and those big athletes coming out and saying, whenever you do the NFL version of this film, I want to speak about it because it's the same with us, the exact same. And that was eye-opening as well.
Well, I think it really humanizes athletes. And it's sometimes we forget that athletes are just people and they're humans. And no matter how good they are in sports, and like you said before, how invincible they seem, they're struggling with the human experience as much as the rest of us. So it is important to tell those stories for them and for others to be able to relate to that and maybe able to get help themselves. You are very community minded, obviously. And you've said you're working to give a voice to those who often are not heard. Where did that passion begin?
I think that passion, and it's definitely a passion of mine, and that purpose came from my own experience with gender, age, maternity, discrimination in the NFL particularly, but also pretty much every level of sports that I came through with the TV networks. It wasn't just limited to NFL Network, but it cut deep. And there were so many times where I couldn't believe that we were still experiencing this, you know, in the 2010s. At the time, I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought my mother fought those battles so that I wouldn't have to. And then I had, you know, awakenings where I just realized that I was right in the middle of the battle and I had to fight back somehow. And I paid a lot of, you know, a heavy price for fighting back to some extent in many different levels of my career. Nobody, you know, you get labeled the loud woman or the not appreciative woman for your job when you're really just fighting, whether it be to maintain your position after maternity leave or be paid the same as your male co-anchors or whatever it is. Those that speak up, you're put in this category of like, oh, you know, she's kind of a pain in the butt. And I think it was my hurt from realizing that, you know, there was nothing I could do to change the fact that I was a woman. Mm-hmm. My life was always going to be difficult, that I started really identifying with a lot of my African-American friends, my Latino friends, you know, all of my friends that had shared these stories that were experiencing that same pain and that same frustration. And, you know, rather than just fight for women's rights and women's empowerment, which is, you know, my number one goal, it was, we need to be all fighting together, because if one part of our society is lagging behind and not getting the opportunities, then none of us are where we should be. So that's why I wanted to tell all kinds of stories that could help lift people up and help. You know, I felt like at times I didn't have a voice. Like, mm-hmm. if I fight back, this is what's going to happen, you know, and you're silenced. And so I wanted to give people an opportunity through my platforms and my projects and my films to feel like they were celebrated for their diversity. They were celebrated for their unique backgrounds and for who they were, for their authentic self. So that's the mission really of everything I do right now.
That's fantastic. And you talked earlier about the gaming app. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what you have going on as you've moved into tech executive? You wear a number of different hats. So you're like, you are a true Renaissance woman. Like when they came up with that name, that was for you.
I know, but I'm exhausted. I'm tired at the end of the day. But no, you know what? I just have a lot of passions and I love doing the stuff I do. And this, hashtag things you thought you'd never do. I mean, tech is, you know, I can't even, you know, tech is just not my realm, right? But creativity is. And this company, Clickstream, it's a public company. It's CLIS on the stock exchange. I started working with them just in COVID because they were starting a gaming app, a trivia app, and they wanted some people that knew TV to kind of help them out. And one of my friends in the NFL said, hey, do you want to host some of these trivia shows from your home? You just turn on. I said, sure. But of course, the producer in me is always going to look at the whole project and say, how can we be better? And so I started giving them pointers, like, we can do this or we should do this. And then finally I said, why don't you just do what you want with this app? Like, why don't you design it? And I said, sure. I'm sitting here with, you know, there's no sports going on at the time. And that's one of those, you know, life just bringing something your way that you never knew you needed. You never wanted, but you definitely needed it. And it's been such an adventure. WinQuick app is the name of the app. It has no C in it. I have no idea. That was a decision, one of the few decisions I didn't make, but it's WinQuick. and you can download it, you know, at any store, Google, Apple. And it's really fun. There are all kind of different ways to win money. We've added a sports element called the Daily Dozen. It's predictive sports gaming. Ooh. But you don't have, you know, a lot of people are super into sports betting right now. It's huge, but they don't want to put up their own money. So our Daily Dozen game on WinQuick allows you to just go on and say true or false, whether you think certain predictions are going to happen that we wrote. And then at the end of the day, if you got a lot of them correct, you win some money, right, in your PayPal account. And then we also have a trivia, a pop culture trivia side of it. Pooch Hall, the actor from Ray Donovan, his movie, the Ray Donovan movie's coming out. He's our host and he's phenomenal. So he does live games, live trivia every Thursday. So, people should check it out. It's just, I think it's a nice escape. It's a nice release from all this. I mean, everything's been so serious these past 2 years. Like, let's just play some games and maybe I'll win some money. That's really what WinQuick app is about.
Which is sounds like a no pun intended win-win.
No C, honest. Though. There's no C anywhere in the
world. Yeah, there's no C, but that sounds like a win-win. Going back a little bit, you've talked a lot about storytelling. That's really kind of been the focus of your career and certainly the focus now. When did you discover a love for telling stories in that way?
You know, I don't think I knew a name for it, right? I think when you're a kid, you have no idea what that passion is, but I knew that, you know, I would write all the time. Writing was just my silent savior. It was, for me, it was this portal that just took me into a different world that my brain was super creative as a kid. And luckily I had a family and parents that really fostered that. But, you know, I'd write poems or I would just do anything to, I would talk to people. I loved talking to people. My mom's joke was, she'd be like, Amber, you're five. You can't talk to strangers. And I'd be like, sure, mom. And I'd walk right up to somebody and be like, what's your story? I live right over here. Like, come to my house and talk to me. And my mom's like, oh my goodness. One of her favorite stories is we were doing we were handing out food at a soup kitchen in our neighborhood. And, being a kid, my mom's protective. And so she said, just stay on this side of, the lunch line. Don't really go out with everybody. That's here, because you don't really know what's happening with them. Right. And she says she lost me. And she turned around. I'm sitting in the middle of a table of underserved people. I'm talking to them. I want to learn about their lives. And my mom was like, oh my gosh, okay, I'm just going to kind of let her do it. But I think that shows that I was a storyteller. I think the biggest part of being a storyteller by nature is you want to listen. So you want to hear other people's. You don't want to tell your own story. You look for other stories. And there's just a passion to turn that around and let everybody know about these compelling stories. And that's always just been at the heart of everything I do, not just like sports casting. I've always been a storyteller in that sense.
What I find really interesting about that story is that that was a situation where you were working with underserved people and you wanted to tell their story. And so it's just kind of interesting to think back on that time for you being so young, but even then realizing how important that is.
Yeah. And again, I credit my parents with, I try to do this. I'm the mother of three children. I think teaching your child to, number one, understand their place in our society and be grateful for where they are, no matter where they are. Mm-hmm. I had a roof over my head. I had two parents that loved me. We weren't rich, but I never wondered where my next meal was coming from. And my parents gave me a good sense of that by introducing me to people who didn't have that. And mm-hmm. that and a sense of obligation that it's our job to help those that need our help. Who are we in this world if we're not helping somebody else? Sorry, I'm getting over a cold, so my voice is a little off.
No worries.
And I've taken that, with my storytelling, and I hope that my children, the number one thing as a mom that I want my kids to have and take into their adulthood is compassion. I think that's the number one trait that any mother would want for their kids. Because I think bravery comes out of compassion. I know that sounds crazy, but when you look at any time somebody did something brave, it was because they cared about somebody else. And I want people to understand real heroes are people that are the most compassionate people. And so I hope that my kids, I try to instill that in them. And I hope they take that with them the way I took it with me from my parents.
It is so important. And I think that is one of the most important things you can teach your children for the world at large, for the people in their class at school, for people they meet. It's so very important. So I definitely commend you for that.
Well, I want to say one thing real quick.
Please.
The strength, there is strength in compassion. Like, it's probably the strongest thing you can do. Just like I think there's strength in admitting that you need help mentally, like Simone Biles. So I think one of my missions with all my projects is to redefine what true strength is in people.
I like that. I like that a lot, redefining what true strength is. Along those lines, and stuff you talked about earlier about, being a woman in the sports industry and having to fight for, equal pay, time off, maternity leave, all of these things that should just be the norm. As a tech executive, a reporter, a mother of three, a storyteller, how do you prioritize yourself and make sure that your mental health isn't being forgotten?
It's hard, and it's a battle daily, though. I, have through my, I would say, last 10 years or so, being really cognizant of how important it is to not leave yourself depleted. So if mm-hmm. you're always working or you're always giving everything to your kids or always fighting the good fight, sometimes you go home and you feel really empty. Mm-hmm. And finding ways to fill myself back up in positive ways, you know, filling yourself back up by just stopping and saying, you know, I'm going to do this for myself today. Uh-huh. You know, my husband's great. For me, time alone is important. Meditation, regrouping. I went to Scottsdale over the summer and just by myself, stayed for 2 days in a hotel by myself, ate dinner by myself. And it was fantastic. I just came back recharged. It's a chance to kind of reprioritize things. When you're a mom of three kids under 10, you're doing all the things I'm doing, everything starts to pile up. And then it's just like the snowball. And so also, I think one of the ways that I take care of myself is I try to forgive myself, and I'm a never enougher. You know, I had one psychiatrist define me as that. You're a never enougher. You're always going to go for something more. You know, never. You need to stop sometimes and go, wow, like, this is pretty cool. This is what I did. Or just, you know, not patting yourself on the back, but I was really lucky to do that. I was really lucky to work on that project. And sometimes look back a little bit and just have that gratitude for the amazing things I've been afforded to do in my career.
And I also think you can pat yourself on the back. I think you have to. it's hard. And it's especially hard for women to do it, but I think we can. It's hard though. I say that as someone who has a very difficult time doing it.
You know, and it's funny. It's like, why do we feel, you know, that when you said that, I got so uncomfortable. And it's like, why are we like that? It's, we're wrong. Plenty of men that are like, I'm great. You know, I
they're not that great
today. I'm like, really? You know, I joke with girlfriends and married girlfriends, you know, you don't get a gold star for doing the dishes, you know, but like husbands want that and moms want, you know, no gold stars for anything. But as a mom too, I do try to really pause and take stock and say, how are each of my kids doing? Like really mm-hmm. take stock of their mental health. How are each of them doing? And how can I maybe pull one of them to the side and just give them some time one-on-one so that they feel really special? And I do pat myself on the back for motherhood because it's hard. It's really hard. And I say, you're hanging in there. Like, not like you should get an award, you're the best mother, but you're really trying and you're trying to be intentional. And that's the standard I'm always going to hold myself to, is just try your best.
Somewhat along these lines, but a little bit different. What is a misstep that you're seeing specifically women make when trying to break into the sports industry?
The biggest one that I see is trying, or I should say, falling into the roles that have been typical for women before them. So when I came into the business, it was like, well, if you want to be in sports, you know, you're going to be a sideline reporter. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, I teach at USC sports commentary, and I tell my students, you know, I'll find women in my class that they want to do play-by-play. They think they're a great analyst. And I said, then why is everything on your demo reel sideline reporting? And it's because they think that's the only thing that is going to be offered to them. But I said, no, instead, use your talents the way you want them to be used. Put that face forward. Put that, like, make that what you present to potential employers. And trust me, they will be impressed that you've been doing play-by-play at the college level. You know, I think the industry is ready for that now. It wasn't ready for it when I came in 25 years ago. And so I think taking advantage of the lack of definition of roles, which my generation has fought so hard for, take advantage of that. I wish I could go back and do that. And I wish I lived in a time that had that opportunity.
What is it a criticism that you received early in your career that was difficult to take, but has turned out to be a positive?
I think, you know, the criticism I would always, and I don't think it was warranted criticism. One thing you hear as a woman is like, oh, what do you know about sports, or right. You know, sports or that. And, I would personalize that so much, and it was so hurtful because men never got asked that. And I would know I was working with men that did not know as much about sports as I did. They didn't do the prep work that I did and the research. Mm-hmm. But I actually had a Hall of Fame broadcaster, Bob Wolf, God rest his soul. He was probably about like in his late 80s when I worked with him at News 12 Long Island. I was producing for him. He was doing the local broadcast. And he looked at some of my charts and he said, wow, you really know sports. And again, you know, kick to the gut. You're like, you know, no, you know what, Sherlock? I work in this profession. You know, right. You want to be a smart ass and say that back. But then he got down, like, because he was standing over me and he said, he goes, look, unfortunately, you're going to have to know twice as much, because in this business, they think you know twice as less. And he said, you're going to have to over prepare. And that was great advice. You know, it made me mad that somebody had to say that, you know, I was like, why? But I always did it. I took the advice, and one thing, I will never be out prepared by anybody. and that really turned out to be a blessing in disguise. But you know, another criticism you take a lot, and this really sucks. It's like, if you're what's perceived as an attractive woman or good looking woman or whatever you call it, it's like you're put into a category that you must be an idiot. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, and it made me, it sounds so horrible. It's like, I wish I wasn't 5'3 and blonde and young. And the older I got, I actually enjoyed it, because that was taken away. That stigma was taken away. The longer I lasted, the older I got, people are like, wow, she's been here for a while. She's not, you know, listen to her speak. But that's something that I hate, that my young students that, you know, people perceive as good looking are going to have to fight that battle. But the ones that aren't good looking must be there for their brains. Like that, how about they're just women doing their job? Like, take away that definition of attractive or not.
100%. It's a difficult industry for women. And I say that as someone who's been very lucky in this industry, that I haven't, obviously we all come up against things in this industry that we do not. And I've been lucky, in terms of the beat. I work on the 49ers beat, and it's a really good beat.
I'll be up there next week. I'll see you up there at training camp.
Oh, you sure will. You will definitely see me at training camp. Fantastic.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm next week.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, I'm excited. Well, great. We'll get to meet in person. Oh, guys, we'll have Get My Job IRL in real life. That'd be great. And I'm lucky on that beat, but you know, I come up upon things all the time. You were talking, I thought of a story, and I really tend to not make this podcast about me, but I think it makes sense.
No, I want to hear about you.
But this is an interesting story. As a 49ers beat reporter, it's December of 2019. I ran into somebody, a man that I'd only met a couple times before. And he said, oh, I've been thinking about you. The 49ers are doing so well. What do you think's going to happen? And I said, honestly, I think they're going to win. I think the winner of the NFC West will be the NFC team in the Super Bowl. And he said, well, that's going to be tough, because they're going to have to play the Packers. I said, yes, they are going to play the Packers, but they beat the Packers already pretty handily, and I feel good about their chances. They're going to have to beat the Saints, maybe in New Orleans. I'm like, well, they did beat the Saints in New Orleans. And then he goes, and I said to him, I said, you know what? If you want to talk about how you think they're going to do, I'm all ears. But you ask me what I think, and I cover the team.
I love that.
And it was like, because it was like, did you just start the conversation to argue with me about it?
Yeah. But he did it to show me up.
And people do it all the time. And I get, people say all the time, they ask me, what do you think about the quarterback situation? I say, no, the thing is with Jimmy, if he stays healthy, he can win. Oh, you just think that because he's good looking. No.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Yeah.
No, that but one got he went old. To the Super Bowl. That's why, you know, and it's just, it's really frustrating. Unfortunately, it is what it is. And I think all we can do, like you said, is over prepare and continue to fight those battles. And it's interesting, because I've come to meet, it's people are intimidated by it. And it makes them nervous.
Strong people are not.
Strong people are not.
One thing I've found is that strong, secure men are not intimidated at all by a strong, secure woman. It's the weak ones.
100%.
You can beat them out, and it's not worth your time.
100%. You nailed
that. Your story is 2019. Imagine coming into the locker rooms and the clubhouses in 98 when I did.
I mean, I can't. Yes, it must have been... I can't imagine. It's like, I can't imagine, but I totally can at the same time.
It was constant. You know, you were constantly reminded of what you were, not who you were, like what you are, like you're a female. And I was like, can I just do my job without pointing out that I'm a female or somebody hitting on me? Or, you know, when you're in your early 20s like that, you have managers or coaches trying to hook you up with their players. Amber, you're a great girl. Don't you want to go out in my second baseman? No, because my credibility would be shocked. And I'm not here for that. Like, let's put that out there. But there was that perception that if you were in this business, it was because you wanted to meet like a good looking pro athlete. That was something we had to fight against. I don't think that's there as much now, but just the knowledge thing is definitely there. Like the lack of, she must have, you know, she doesn't know as much because she never played football. I'm like, well, you played Pop Warner until you were 7.
Right.
So, you know, like that doesn't make, you know, that just because you played until you were 10 doesn't mean that you know more than I do.
And there are those memes and plenty of tweets about when you say, oh yeah, I'm a sports reporter. I love sports. Oh, really? Name the offensive line of the Bears in 1984. And it's just such a frustrating thing. It kind of is what it, you know, in some ways it is what it is, but it's still frustrating. And like I said before, all we can do is keep on fighting, so to speak.
And let me just tell you, you know, I've worked with the best of the best, the Deion Sanders, Rich Eisen, Scott Hansen, Michael Irvin, Marshall Faulk. They've all been co-hosts, co-anchors with me on major sets. And I can tell you, none of them can list, you know, the starting offensive line from 1979 on some team. Right. We all have to look that up, right? Like all of us have to look that up. Just like a lawyer can't tell you, you know, a case that set a precedent back in, you know, 1949, they have legal clerks to like look that up. That's what they have paralegals for. I mean, just like we have researchers. So this idea that, you know, you're supposed to be some sort of sports encyclopedia, yeah, and that women aren't and that men are, it's just so false.
It is so false, but you made a very good point earlier, and that is it's weak men who are intimidated by that. You're never going to hear that from a strong, secure person. That's not even just men, strong, secure person. And it does help weed out the people that you can keep out of your circle and avoid.
That's true. And I can tell you firsthand, the biggest feminist I've ever worked with have mostly been former players, the big macho alpha types that you think they would be like, oh God, I can't believe she's my co-host. They have done more. When I listed those guys, you know, Willie McGinnis, you know, Deion Sanders, Nate Burleson, Michael Robinson, they all stood up for me in times where I was being discriminated against and weren't afraid when other people were, afraid to lose their job. If they spoke up, they, you know, walked right into the president of the network's office and said, this is not right. So, I mean, I say one of the first feminists I ever met was my father. And that trend has continued with some of these alpha males that you would think would be the opposite. But they, you know, they're secure in who they are. And I was never intimidating to them. They want to lift up their colleagues.
So how have you seen opportunities change and grow for women in the industry? And where do you think we can still improve?
I think one area that's really improved over the last just like 2 or 3 years is opportunities to women of color. You know, when I was trying to break in the 90s, when I broke in, everybody looked like me. The few women that were there all looked at me. They were all Caucasian. Some had brown hair. Most had blonde hair. I mean, it was even a brown blonde hair thing. And they just all looked the same. Even when I came to NFL Network in 2012, literally every woman was a white blonde. And usually that's indicative of one person doing the hiring and gravitating towards the same type of woman, which they don't do for hiring men. And so I've really been proud to see a lot of my friends get an opportunity that are women of color because they just weren't. And that's a fact. I mean, that's look at the numbers. I used to look around at NFL Network and say, you mean to tell me at the local levels, we can't find one African-American reporter that's a female? We can't find one Asian-American woman? Nothing, none. You mean to tell me they don't exist or you're just not looking for them? Mm-hmm. You're not out there recruiting and you're not putting them in the pipeline and you're not developing the talent. So again, it comes back to being intentional, and I'm seeing more intentional hires because of the pressure from what society, this kind of reckoning that we're experiencing as a society when it comes to race and gender right now, because of horrific events of the past couple of years. But I think the good thing of that is the pendulum has swung the other way, and we're starting to see people get their foot in the door, and man, are they taking off with it. very talented people. And that's I think that's wonderful. Where we can get better is, as I said, we can have better roles, more roles that have been designated for men, the play-by-play, the analysts. You know, we're seeing Mina Kimes be an analyst, Cynthia Freeland be an analyst. Why do you have to be a man or a former player to be an NFL analyst? So, I think we're doing better in those areas, but we're still so far off. You know, we just had the first MLB all-female broadcast, mm-hmm. and I did a lot of press around that because people remember the work I did with MLB. And, you know, I said in one interview, I said, this is amazing. Tears came to my eyes because I know those women. I know how hard they fought for this. They deserve every minute. But let's look at what they're being paid today. And then let's compare it to any broadcast around MLB anywhere today. I bet you it's not even half of the combined broadcast. And so that's where we need to be tremendously better. I can remember making less than a third of my male co-host at NFL Network, and I had been there longer than him doing the same job.
Yeah, that's just not okay. And it is actually pretty amazing that in 2021, this is still an issue. And it is very much still an issue, but it is rather incredible, and not, I don't mean incredible in a good way.
Yeah, it's disappointing. It's disappointing. And but you doing this is amazing. You having a platform where we can talk about this, you know, you keep the pressure on. You keep the pressure on. One of my best friends, Aisha Cheney, she's a producer at NFL, senior producer at NFL Network. She's fought her way up as a African-American woman. She's helped started the Black Engagement Network within the NFL. And, you know, her and I talk a lot, and there's many nights where she's frustrated and feels like, what are we doing this for? And then there's many nights, you know, where she's like, I'm just going to keep the pressure on. Uh-huh. Just keep it coming. Don't give up. And that's, you know, what we do. That's why we're here.
If you could give our listeners one piece of advice for starting a career in your field, and it could be I say your field because you have a number of fields, but in any of the fields or all of the fields that you choose, what would it be?
Work hard, believe that you have something valuable to offer, and never stop creating things in your head and coming up with ways to present those ideas. Always bring something to the table because you belong at the table.
Oh, I like that. Before we get into five fun facts, can you take us through a day in your life? Because I imagine it's very busy and very varied. So I would love to hear how you kind of prioritize everything. And something we talk a lot about on this podcast is there's no such thing as balance every day. You're not everything is going to get, you know, the same amount every day. And obviously we have to pick and choose, but kind of just love to hear. And you can pick what day it is.
Oh my gosh, my days are crazy. Let me think. I mean, a day, do you want me to do like a normal day when I'm at home or like when I'm traveling for football?
I would say, could you do both?
Yeah. Okay. Cause it's very different days.
That'd be great. I would love to hear both if you're open to it.
Okay. One of my typical days is, you know, when I'm at home, I'm not traveling for sports or anything. It's usually, I wake up very early, you know, usually about 6:30 with a child, one of the three, poking me on the head or standing over me like really creepy until I wake up. So that's, you know, you wake up, so that's how I wake up. how long have you been standing there? It's creepy. And so it usually, you know, it's a rush. It's the mom thing, right? It's checking my emails first to just make sure there's nothing urgent for any of my companies, any of my projects, just making sure that that's okay. That's out of the way. So I take a few minutes to do that. And then it's making breakfast, you know, cooking oatmeal, packing lunches, getting together stuff for camp here in the summer, you know. Oh, do you have your tennis racket? Do you have your bathing suit? Do you guys have sunscreen on? You know, you sunscreen up three different kids. And then who's driving them where? So I'm usually a shuttle service or we're carpooling or you're picking up other kids. And then, I mean, you literally like you don't even stop. You're like rolling through wherever you're dropping them off and just kick them out of the car. And then like you take off. And for me, then I spend a couple hours just doing, you know, getting the day started work-wise. I'll go into my office and I'll try to tackle all the early meetings. And it can be my back-to-back meetings can be for three different businesses or projects. So I can be, you know, on one meeting trying to negotiate terms for acquiring the rights to an animated feature that I'm working on. And then I'll turn around and my next meeting is about, you know, what we're doing with our ad accounts for WinQuick app. You know, are we reaching the right audiences? And then my next meeting is, you know, what I'm going to be doing at 49ers camp. Like, what shows am I doing? Who do I need to reach out to? Getting prepared. So that's how my day goes. And it really is disjointed. It's kind of like, you know, you're here and then you're there. Your mind has to jump for so many different things. But usually the one thing I do every day to kind of regroup is I'll go down in my office. There's a gym. So I'll go downstairs. I'll get a workout in. Being an athlete was always important to me and it's good for my mental health. So that's where I kind of regroup. And then, you know, it's much of the same for the rest of the day. I'm always creating something. I'm always writing something. I'm always thinking of a new idea, or I'm doing research to support this new idea. And, you know, then there's a million calls from my husband because he can't remember the schedule I gave him. You know, he said, when I leave, you got the schedule, right? Yeah. And then, you know, 50 calls throughout the day, like, where's this kid and where's that? And so your mind is always with your kids too, because you always have to think like, did this nanny get them to the soccer practice? Or where's number three? Where's number one? Where are they right now? You're checking, they have their little watches where they check in. Where are they? So your mind never stops. And then I come home and I like to cook. You know, I come from a family of, you know, people that cooked, and food is important. So it's important for me to sit down and them to have a healthy meal, and we sit down together. I'm very traditional in that sense. But that takes a lot of effort, you know, so you're stopping at the grocery store, then you're cooking, and then they complain they don't like it. And it's a normal mom stuff. You know, it's all normal stuff. And then usually it's a rat race to get them to bed with the baths, and I'm still answering phone calls and trying to still work. And then it'll usually end up with, you know, a nice hot shower, and many, many nights it ends in a glass of wine. Let's just put it that way. Many, many nights.
Well, that's fair.
On the patio. I live in California. It's beautiful. Me and my husband, you know, so we take that minute, and that's kind of where I regroup and get ready for the next day. It's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot. And so what is a game day like?
Game days are awesome. You know, that's where it's nice because I'm away. So I know that everybody is fending for themselves back home, but they're in a different mindset. You know, whether it's the babysitters, the nanny, the other parents, my husband, they know they're in charge. Like, they know when I'm gone, don't call me. Like, you guys have to figure it out. So I feel much more confident throughout the day that everybody at home is okay. And then I can really focus on my craft, which is so exciting. You know, I wake up, usually I'll do the meeting with the crew that I'm working with, and then I will go get a workout in. You know, I'll do a little research and then I'll go get a workout in. And then I'll just get ready, you know, make sure all my notes, all of my, you know, I really have an interview of who I want to talk to that day, what storylines I'm watching for. I prepare a whole document that I take with me to the stadium. And then, you know, it's the fun part. You arrive at the stadium and the energy's there and you're with the rest of the media and you're on the field. And I'm really lucky that my gigs allow me to be like on the field. You know, if I'm doing Monday Night Football, I can walk to the 50-yard line and talk to Lamar Jackson, you know, while he's warming up. And that's really great, getting background information to use during the broadcasts. And, you know, then you get ready to report everything that you know, everything that you've learned as it is fit throughout the game. And, you know, it's definitely a high that, you know, I'm sure you know this for so many years.
Yes.
Doing a live broadcast, you know, it's a high. You can't just go back to your hotel room. Like, whether you're with the crew or whatever, we go eat, you go for a beer, just to, like, decompress. Like, you've got to come down from this high of live television or live radio or whatever it is, and the energy in a stadium. And then I love just being able to be in my hotel room. You know, I didn't have to put any kids to bed knowing I'm going to sleep soundly with nobody else in my bed all night. And I value that. And I value my quiet cup of coffee in the morning before I fly out. So it's a ritual. It's definitely, you know, something I value a lot, being on the road. I've always been a road dog in this business.
That's awesome. Well, Amber, this has been a lot of fun. It's just been very inspiring. I've learned a lot. I know our listeners have learned a lot. But I, of course, I can't let you go because we have to do five fun facts. And actually, even though our listeners are for sure sick of me hearing this, you would not know this. Five fun facts is something I started with the 49ers players, and we do it one-on-one, and they give me five fun facts about them that you wouldn't otherwise know. But on Get My Job, we ask everybody the same five, which is great because we get so many different answers. Okay. So if you are ready.
I am. I'm nervous. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Five fun facts with Amber Theo Harris. Amber, what is your favorite moment in sports?
I would have to say it was the Ravens, being a girl from Baltimore, being able to cover my first Super Bowl was when the Ravens won in 2012 in New Orleans.
Oh, I was there. This one.
Oh, cool.
At that point, I was just there as a fan, but I was there. It was an incredible game.
It was a cool Super Bowl.
What is your life motto?
What do you have to lose?
What do you have to lose? That's a good, you know what? That's a great life motto.
You're going to live.
You know what? I absolutely love that. What do you have to lose? What is your go-to workout that you mentioned you get in during the day?
It's mostly HIIT, you know, high intensity interval training. A lot of jumping, although my hip has gone bad as I get older, but a lot of jumping and keeping the heart rate up and muscle building.
Go-to coffee order.
Oh, that's an almond latte at Starbucks.
Mm, delicious. And what is a book every woman should read?
Give me a second. I read all the time. I have like a whole list.
Take your time.
Every woman, though. Like, that's different because I usually get your favorite book. Every woman. I would say The Power of Now.
Okay. I like it. Amber, thank you so much for joining me today. Oh, you broke up. Amber, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. This has been so fun. I can't wait to see you at 49ers camp.
I know, it'll be amazing. And if you guys liked what you heard, which I know that you did, make sure to leave us a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Fangirl Sports Network. I'll talk to everybody next week. Bye, y'all.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.